Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 20 of the By God Wrestling Podcast. As per usual, I am your host, Chris Lipscomb. Joining me this week is the wrestling mastermind and the man who is going to meet Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Grado and someone else who I've forgotten.
Hello.
On Saturday. It's Colin Bass. Hello, Colin.
Hello.
Who's the other person?
Ted DiBiase.
Ted DiBiase, yeah. That's not as cool as his dad.
What? No, it's his dad.
Oh, it is his dad. Oh, that's awesome.
It's his dad.
I thought you meant Ted DiBiase Jr. Oh, you mean Ted DiBiase Sr. That's awesome.
Who gives a fuck about Jr.?
No one. He's basically a great wrestler.
Yeah, I could tell you that.
Ted DiBiase Jr. is just the default creator wrestler model, right?
Yeah, I don't even know where he is now.
I think he's doing stuff on the indies, as all ex-WWE guys are, and making loads of money. Because that's how indies work. If you were in WWE at one point, you can charge quite a lot of money, it turns out. Also with us this week is Peter. You're right, Pete. You don't get an intro.
Oh, I just feel like I'm a jobber then.
I ran out of steam.
I'm already in the ring in my blue trunks.
That's the best bit about NXT, actually, is that NXT actually uses jobbers. I love it.
Yeah, now and again they do, yeah.
We are going to talk about a variety of things. But first, we are going to talk, obviously it's SummerSlam tomorrow, we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but first we're going to talk about the NXT TakeOver card, which, as this podcast goes out, will probably be like tonight. NXT TakeOver is looking awesome. Obviously, for me, the big thing here is Jushin Thunder Liger, right? We're all excited about Jushin Thunder Liger versus Tyler Breeze.
Yeah. I'm excited to see Jushin Thunder Liger again, because I haven't seen him since, I think, the mid-90s on WCW.
Yeah.
However...
I will point out he's changed his style a lot since then.
Yeah, well, I'm a little bit concerned about that because I'm not sure that Jushin Thunder Liger 20 years later is going to be as interesting as he was then.
No, he's still pretty good. He's just kind of he's a lot more kind of Japanese strong style type thing and a lot more kind of mat based and submission based, I believe. So he doesn't bounce around the ring, but he's still going to be very good. He's one of the few wrestlers that's really managed to like adapt his style.
Does he still wrestle in this big, huge mask?
Yeah, obviously.
That's fucking awesome. That's the best mask in wrestling. It's just so impractical.
Yeah, I know. It's brilliant, right? no, I would argue like Drago's mask from Lucha Underground is incredibly impractical as well. Because Drago's mask is like a full-on special effects mask to make him look like a fucking dragon.
Okay. Granted.
Have you seen I'm going to find Drago's
mask?
Yeah,
I've seen it.
It's incredibly impractical, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, Colin?
I was kind of excited, and then I'm like Peter, and I realised the guy is 50.
Yeah, but he still draws in Japan, and he's still meant to be like... For I've seen a few things that he's done recently, not a lot, and he can still go. Like, he can still wrestle.
Incidentally, I don't know much about... Sorry to interrupt, Chris, but you mentioned Lucha Underground. I don't know much about Lucha Underground, but I watched a couple of YouTube videos this week. Did they have a team of turtles?
No, that wasn't Lucha Underground. That's just general Lucha Libre.
Okay.
There's a different... Lucha Underground is a promotion. Lucha Libre is a style.
Oh, yeah, no, I know Lucha Libre, the style, but
from Lucha Underground.
I saw photographs of, like, a four-man tag team that were all Ninja Turtles.
There is a tag team of Ninja Turtles. It's just not in Lucha Underground.
Oh, wrestling's awesome.
There's, in fact, two tag teams from Ninja Turtles who faced off, and there was a run-in from a third team of Ninja Turtles.
I've just found a photo of like eight turtles suplexing each other.
Yeah, it's amazing. No, the best video of them is where they like where Donatello just starts hip tossing all of them and then hip tosses himself and they all lie on their backs and can't get up because they're like they're turtles that are on their shells down.
Yeah, oh dear,
it's brilliant. Yeah. That's absolutely fantastic. That video.
Oh my god, please just Google image Lucha Turtles and it's the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, they're brilliant, right? They're great. I love them.
This is why I love wrestling.
Yeah, it's fucking nuts. sadly, Peter, that is not in Lucha Underground.
Okay. Well, I think they're missing a trick.
But if you like Lucha Underground, or if you'd like to see Lucha Underground, you should check out Pentagon Jr. versus Vampiro match. It is fucking crazy.
Vampiro's old as well.
Yeah, this is the first match Vampiro's wrestled in like 10 years or something.
Yeah.
How's
he looking?
He actually was fine. He wrestled a good match. He went and did Steve Austin's podcast and gave a very complimentary interview to Pentagon, like talking about Pentagon Jr., saying that Pentagon Jr. basically did all the work in the match. and Pentagon, he like just really like hyping Pentagon Jr., saying that he had done all the work in the match and still made Vampiro look like $1 million in it, which I would agree with. It's you should, both of you and anyone listening should go and check it out. It's a fantastic, slightly kind of almost ECW/deathmatch style match, but it is really good.
Well, that sounds awesome.
It's got fucking light tubes in it.
I can't remember exactly what it was I watched because it was a couple of weeks ago, but it was just a couple of like YouTube clips of it. Mm. But the thing I really liked about it, I'm nearly sure this was Lucha Underground, was that the champion, who was also a villain, was an American. And they were using him like the WWE uses Russians. It was like this big evil American coming to the ring, being all American. All the Mexicans were like, yeah, fuck off.
No, that's not. I don't think that's Lucha Underground because the champion was Prince Puma. Now, I can't. I don't think.
Oh, no, maybe not then.
Is that?
But that does sound awesome.
New Japan?
No, that would. That's like, it would just be a different. It might be like AAA or something like that.
Mm.
Just be a different Mexican promotion. But that does sound awesome. I'm very much in favor of that. But yeah, check out Lucha Underground. The season's finished now, but hopefully it's season two looks like it could get funded. Like the producers are saying they're aiming to start. I can't think if it's shooting in January or it's going to begin airing in January. It's one of the two. But that's kind of what they're aiming
for. Holy shit, Chavo Guerrero's there.
Yeah, not so much like later in the season, but yeah, he is. They kind of brought him in because they wanted him as like to lend legitimacy to it. Which I think is really a really smart idea. Like, because it's such a big family name that if you can get one of the Guerreros in, that really aids legitimacy, because a lot of the guys who are there from AAA are kind of like mid-card guys in AAA. So they needed someone who really bolsters it.
And wasn't Rey Mysterio there for a while as well?
No, Rey Mysterio is in AAA. There's a whole thing, basically, because Lucha Underground is like an offshoot promotion of AAA.
I'm doing that thing, aren't I, that's a little bit racist, where anything Mexican just must be the one thing.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
okay. Well, I apologise for that.
Rey Mysterio does wrestle in AAA, though. He was in something recently at, like, it's called, their big show is called Triple Mania, and he was, I think he wrestled there, but I can't remember who or what for, in what context.
Oh, but Conan sure was there as well.
Oh, Conan's on Lucha Underground. Yeah, Conan's pretty awesome. He's like proper. It's really interesting because it's a really classic kind of heel manager with a face champion, which is kind of, it's a nice combination, I think.
Awesome.
Prince Puma is just like super face, but Conan is like proper heel. So it's it like attacks people with, well, not in matches, but like post match and stuff. He comes in and attacks people with his cane if they like were necessary. It's pretty great. We weren't going to talk about Lucha Underground. We're actually going to talk about NXT TakeOver and Jushin Thunder Liger there. It's awesome. I guess the other big match on the card, obviously, is the ladder match for the NXT title. Do we think Finn Balor is going to retain against Kevin Owens?
Yes.
Yes.
It would be madness otherwise, right?
Yes.
Yes. Also, yeah. I have to say, I am super excited about those two in a ladder match.
Yeah, it's going to be great. But it also feels like, given that we assume, because I agree, like Finn Balor's going to win, it's like really classic heel booking. Like Kevin Owens has chosen the stipulation.
Yeah.
And it's going to come back and bite him in the ass.
Yeah. I really hope that Kevin Owens doesn't go easy, though, because I think with him being moved up, I think that there's a temptation for him to sort of protect himself a little bit. Mm. And I don't think he will.
I don't think he gives a shit.
No, I don't think it. Yeah, I don't think that's in his character, but I really hope not, because those two could put on an excellent ladder match.
Yeah, I think that's going to go crazy. But the smart thing about a ladder match as well is you can have Kevin Owens lose and still look strong, which is kind of what they need to do, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, ladder matches are really good for not having to like make the loser look weak.
Yep.
Because you just like, oh, he took one crazy spot and then couldn't get up. Or, like, I pinned him under all this stuff.
Yeah.
The only thing that would make this perfect for me is it does seem like the optimal time for a Finn Balor heel turn.
Mm. How, though? Nobody's going to out-heel Kevin Owens.
No, but I could see, like, Finn Balor winning in a really heely way. And it would be great. And then he can do the whole Demon Balor thing and then reveal that obviously he was the one who injured Hideo Itami.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure they don't know who it actually is yet, but it's quite obviously like Demon Balor. yeah. there's the most it's the right decision to make.
I don't think Kevin Owens will be on NXT after this, so that would make sense.
Yeah, I think this is going to be Kevin Owens. Yeah, this is definitely going to be his strong son. This and then he's going up to the main roster.
But it's weird. Well, who would be babyface coming up against him? Hideo Itami when he's back, and then
Sami Zayn's back in Florida.
Is Sami Zayn back yet?
He's not back on TV or anything, but he is back in Florida. He's back training.
He's on this week's episode, but just like basically bigging up Takeover, not wrestling.
That's good.
They said he probably wasn't going to be clear to wrestle. Well, he said he's probably not clear to wrestle until the new year, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think if he's working out, it's probably like light workouts just to keep him fit.
Aside from that, they don't really have many faces at the minute that are big.
Samoa Joe is kind of face.
I think that, though, more generally about NXT, that's a problem that they have, is that the fan base, and especially the crowd at Full Sail, are so sort of clued in to the business that it doesn't matter if you're a heel or a face, they can cheer for you.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes works against them. Like Kevin Owens gets such a big pop every time he comes out. And he's supposed to be a heel, and he's a really good heel, but he still gets cheered. He's still like half the crowd's wearing his t-shirt.
Do you know what I like about him, though, is that he then berates the crowd for cheering.
Yeah.
He basically shits on the crowd for cheering him. He's like, but pretty much goes, you idiots, I'm the fucking heel.
Yeah.
Without breaking character. Might just stay in character and tell him that he's meant to be the bad guy. It's great. It just works perfectly.
But I do think that sometimes that works against NXT for getting over with a mainstream audience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it does my head in the NXT crowd most of the time.
Yeah, they're just dicks. They're just huge dicks.
And you lose a big part of psychology in the match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Which I think... I don't know if you agree with this. I was speaking to my friend a few weeks ago about Kevin Owens, and he lacks a lot of psychology in the ring. We were talking back about his recent matches with John Cena and some of his other matches, and there's really not any psychology in it. And I think that's a symptom of the indie style and then coming into NXT, where that was very similar.
Yep.
Because there is a big problem in NXT. I haven't watched in a few weeks, but when I was watching it, there is no real heel or face in terms of the crowd reaction. Yep, so no one's actually playing to it.
Yeah. And it that, as you say, that plays out in the way they tell a story in the ring. And obviously they don't do quite so much promo stuff. So they don't really tell stories. They just have matches.
Yeah. The matches mostly revolve around big move, big move, big move, big move, finish. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Which to me is getting a bit tiring in WWE.
So just a quick point about this. Of the 10 matches listed, only 6 of them are actually on the TakeOver event, and the other 4 are for the taping.
The Wikipedia page just changed in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, it details it. Who do you think? Do you think Blake and Murphy are going over, or the Vaudevillains? Yeah.
Blake and Murphy, I think.
But I want to see, because the Vaudevillains said they've got a plan to contain Alexa Bliss, and I want to know what it is.
It's going to be another woman, isn't it? It's going to be
Probably, although the single best idea I heard was the Vaudevillains tie Alexa Bliss to train tracks. That would just be amazing. That'd be so perfect, right?
Yeah, that would be quite funny.
But they've
kind of eased off on their stuff as well. The Vaudevillains always used to be awesome, because every time they were getting interviewed or anything, it was always black and white.
Yeah.
And they've sort of eased off on that a bit as well, which is a shame.
The interesting thing I'm kind of noticing at the minute with NXT, though, is it feels like they are very slowly teasing a... William Regal heel turn,
mm-hmm.
because of certain things he's saying where like he's playing favorites,
mm-hmm.
and things like that, and that kind of makes me suspect that he might go heel, like heel authority, which would be quite an interesting direction to take NXT.
I think that's the only way William Regal works. I don't think he works when he's not being a heel.
Oh, I love him though as the authority figure, because he's so charming.
I don't know, I think that comes across as smarmy.
No, I really like him.
William Regal's a natural heel. Babyface isn't.
Oh, he's so
isn't quite for him.
Yeah, but he's not really a babyface. I don't see him as a babyface general manager. I just see him as like a perfectly neutral down the middle general manager. Like I don't see him as heel or face at all. I just see him as a complete neutral. But I would like to see him go heel, definitely.
What matches are on the card then?
So you got the Finn Balor Kevin Owens ladder match, Jushin Thunder Liger versus Tyler Breeze, tag titles match, Sasha Banks versus Bayley for the NXT Women's Championship. Who do you think is going to win? Do you think Bayley's going to take it?
Yes.
Bayley. You also got Baron Corbin versus Samoa Joe, which I think is going to be either a terrible match or a really, really good match, and I don't know which way it's going to go. I think we're going to see the depth of Corbin's offense, like see if he's actually can wrestle or if he's just got the end of days and like power moves. And then the debut of Apollo Crews, where he is wrestling Ty Dillinger, which I think that should be a good match as well. They do tend to debut people quite well.
Yeah, the only worry I have with that match is that it's probably likely to be a bit of a crush, and Ty Dillinger doesn't deserve that.
No, but they fired CJ Parker, so someone's going to get crushed.
They didn't fire, he was
quit. Yeah, sorry, CJ Parker left, yeah.
Yeah.
They left on really good terms, too, didn't they?
Yeah.
He's retiring from wrestling, though.
Is he?
Because there was a whole thing that he was talking about.
Has he joined Greenpeace?
I can't remember who it was, but I was listening to an interview with whoever it was who trained him, and it's quite a famous wrestler who trained him. And he was saying that he was actually really proud of him for leaving NXT and like proving that that's not all there is to WWE, and that he's going to he's gonna go and tour the world and stuff. And like a week later, he announced he was retiring, which is just really depressing. Because he wasn't brilliant, but I think he was at an age and of a talent level where if he did go and like rotate through the indie scene, because he'd only ever really done WWE. If he went and rotated through the indie scene, he'd really like gain from it. It would really like push him up, because those for me, it's really obvious that those are the ones who really work on NXT are the people who've been through the indie scene first, who've kind of come up that way.
Yeah, because it takes more than 6 weeks training.
Yeah. Well, no, actually the training there is actually quite intensive, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, but I mean, you see people like, for example, one of the off-card or one of the off-TV matches that they're filming at this Brooklyn thing is Carmella versus Eva Marie. Eva Marie's been in the WWE for like 3 years now, and she's not good enough to be in the ring. And she's been training, like heavily training, for a couple of months now. She's been off on her own training with Brian Kendrick.
Yeah, she's really improving.
She has improved. I don't think she's really improving. I think she has improved, but she still doesn't have the natural rhythm or technique that it requires. So she still tends to occasionally look dangerous.
Also, although I've only seen her hit it once, she does hit the worst sliced bread I think I've ever seen. It's just absolutely dreadful. Like, she basically, rather than running up the corner, she like walks up it, and so it just looks really shit.
Yeah, that was Kendrick's.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously Kendrick was awesome with it, but for her, it's just the way she did it the first time the only time I've seen it, I was just like, oh, that looks
really
awful.
Awkward. That was the only time she'd done it, because that's what she did when she went away to train with him.
Yeah, because it was on Total Divas. I saw the Total Divas clip of her learning how to do it. But yeah, it was, to be fair, actually, the clip of her doing it, she looked better on the clip of her doing it on Total Divas than she did doing it actually in a match.
Yep.
Which makes sense, because there's no real pressure there. And she was also landing on a crash mat.
And doing it with Brian Kendrick.
And doing it with Brian Kendrick, who knows how.
There's no substitute for actual working in front of a crowd, though.
No, there's not.
And NXT, you can tell the new guys that are coming in are quite. So it's hard for them coming from the training center where they've not had the world experience that a guy like Bauer or Owens has had.
It does. I think that it's difficult, because when I got really sort of into NXT, it was a sort of the peak after the developmental, that sort of class had matured and were ready to move up. Whereas now it looks very much developmental again.
Yeah, as you can tell, the guys are new and fresh.
To be fair, I think
I think NXT is going to be a bit hard for them to develop because of the crowd. And when they're on the road, the crowds are getting are the smart fans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're going to be that same.
But if nothing else, it's great for those new guys that are coming up that are fresh and needing to learn the business. It's great that NXT is managing to attract people like Samoa Joe like even the big names like Jushin Thunder Liger. But spending the past 6 months working with Finn Balor and Kevin Owens is massive for those people.
Yeah. I do have to say that I really think if you're looking for the next face, like, could be Apollo Crews.
Yeah.
Like, he's got the talent because he's come up from Uha Nation in the Indies, where he was doing good stuff there. I haven't seen much of his work, but I understand he was doing very good work there. And also, for, like, have you seen the promo for him?
Yeah.
But, like, for a guy his size to be hitting a standing moonsault is really impressive.
Oh, so, his athleticism is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Because he is a pretty big dude. For
yeah, like, when he pulled that off, and then, like, there's the shot, like, the shot from underneath of him just hitting, like, standing moonsault after standing moonsault, I was like, yeah, that's absolutely nuts. He's great. I'm starting to see the crazy, not from guys his size, but from, like, the really athletic guys, starting to see crazy shit, like, standing red arrows, like a standing corkscrew shooting star press, mm-hmm. which you're just like, how? How have you hit that? Also, Ricochet once hit I've seen a video of doing, but this was a few years back now, but he was told not to hit it anymore because it's too dangerous. Hit a double moonsault, like a double rotation moonsault. But he was talked out of it by, like, fairly senior guys on the indie circuit, like the Young Bucks, who were like, yeah, don't do that. It's crazy dangerous.
Oh, yeah. You could land on your own head, or you could spin so fast that you knee the guy in the face.
Yeah. They're like, it looks fucking awesome, but never do it again. but yeah, the shit we're seeing now from, like, the guys on the indies is ridiculous, and it's gonna be interesting if we can get some of those guys who are more, like, guys who are kind of spot monkeys to an extent, or guys who are just really good at hitting those kind of spots, but then, like, bring them in and get them, the guys who are just pure spot monkeys, get them some real psychological training with, like, some of the best guys in the business, but also the guys who are kind of have got both elements, like people like Ricochet. I'd love to see them come up, but I don't think they ever will, because the problem with the indie circuit now is I think this is going to start to become a problem for NXT, is that they can make more money and work less time on the indies. So why wouldn't you? It's the same reason that AJ Styles will never come to NXT, because AJ Styles, they, like, a thing, he posted his schedule up and had forgotten to take out, like, the price for one event, and it was like, it's an event I'm actually going to, but it's two shows, but it's $8,000 for those two shows. And you're like, well, why would you go to NXT where you're not going to make anything like that?
It depends what your ambition and end goal is. If you're a guy like AJ Styles who's later in his career, is it worth taking the risk to go to NXT and possibly make less money, have to relocate, and know you might not ever get called up to the main roster and make big money?
Exactly.
Or you can work on indies around your own schedule and family.
Yeah, but I think
it depends what your priorities is. If you're a 24-year-old guy, you'd be stupid not to go to NXT. But if you're 37, 38, it depends what your priority is.
I think the answer to that is that NXT starts signing people the way they have with Rhino and Samoa Joe, where they're still working indie shows.
But the problem there is they Samoa Joe less, and Samoa Joe is working his last indie show in a couple of weeks. But with people like Rhino, is they've got no intent of bringing them up to the main roster. Like, Rhino is just a special attraction for NXT. He's never coming up to the main roster. But Samoa Joe will.
I disagree.
You don't think Samoa Joe will ever come up?
No.
Why not? Like,
I think he's one of those guys that at his age they're not going to bother putting him up and investing in him. I think he's one of those guys who they've just signed for NXT, and I think if they signed a guy like AJ Styles, like Bad Influence, if they signed people like that, it's just for NXT.
See, I don't think they've signed Samoa Joe just for NXT, because because if they'd done that, they would not have signed him to the deal they've signed him to, or he's on an exclusive contract now.
I still don't ever see it happening. But to me, it's a few years too late, and I think the guys, I think 36 or 37, they're not going to bring him up and start investing in him then, I don't think.
I reckon they will. I think because Kevin Owens is nearly that age. Kevin Owens is old.
He's not that old.
Kevin Owens.
Excuse me. Mid-30s is not old.
No, but to be coming up to, like, the main roster.
Kevin Owens is 31, so.
31 is late to be coming up.
to the main roster.
31 is late.
I wouldn't say 31 is late. I'd say 36 is late. I think 31's about the right time for most people.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. It depends.
It depends where you wanna where people are coming up though. For Kevin Owens,
depends who's doing the booking.
But Kevin Owens coming up in the position he's come up, 31 is the right age because you don't bring him up in the position he's in to as if he's 20, you know. But I think other guys have come up at ridiculously young ages and have done really well.
Well, a guy like Cody Rhodes came up when he was ridiculously young.
Yeah.
But to me, what? Like Kevin Owens' things, it's about the right age to bring a guy up from developmental, unless he's something special.
You look at Paige. Paige is 23, which is incredibly depressing.
Yeah, but she started wrestling when she was like 7.
That's... Yeah.
But yeah. To me, I don't ever see Samoa Joe coming up because I don't think they would know what to really do with him on the main roster. I think NXT is about perfect for him. I'd love to see him on the main roster. I just don't think they ever will.
Yeah, it's difficult to see how they would develop his character because he's... Yeah, my instinct is to think that the WWE would be clumsy enough to just go, well, he's Samoan, so we'll put him with the Usos.
So,
and that would kind of be a shame.
Yeah, it's hard when a guy comes in like Samoa Joe at that age with such a developed persona.
Unless
you bring him up and you try and do something different with him and the fans that know him reject it. But if you bring him up as what he has been, would the new fans ever bother about him?
Well, it's worked for Kevin Owens.
Yeah, but I think that's a bit different for Kevin Owens, just in his style and his persona. Samoa Joe's persona is kind of shoot wrestler type guy.
Yeah, but I would love to see Samoa Joe come up and just straight up kill people. Would you not want to see Samoa Joe versus Brock Lesnar? Would that not be a really good match?
I want to see it, I just don't think it'll ever happen, because I don't think they know really what to do with him on a main roster.
No, I think you book him how he's booked now. You just book him as a monster.
I don't think they would. That's a problem.
I don't think they will, but I think if you want to bring him up, you book him as a monster and that's it. Like, he's perfect. That's all you need to do with him. And it's interesting because he works as a face monster as well, which is really rare to get. There are very few wrestlers who can work equally well as a monster in heel or face. It's such a traditional heel position, but he really works it as like, well, at least a tweener kind of position. Because I think if you look at the stuff he's doing in NXT, he is quite clearly, I'd argue, no, he's clearly face with where he's like interfering where like Kevin Owens is being a dick and he just turns up and is like, don't be a dick. And then, where Baron Corbin was just being a complete arsehole and Samoa Joe is, I really like him as kind of the guy who comes and confronts bullies. It's like, if you want to bully someone, fucking bully me. Come on then. Yeah. And that's a really good position for him to be in. I think it would be relatively easy to book him the same way in WWE. I think it'd be relatively easy to book it, to have him come in against, I don't even know who would necessarily, but like someone like if Bray Wyatt, if you get rid of the Wyatt family and Bray Wyatt is fucking someone up, send him out and that would work really well.
Yeah. But all that depends on them putting some time and effort into figuring out how best to book somebody. And that's not something that WWE has really bothered to do in the past long time.
It's because they don't book anyone anymore. They just have writers.
Hmm. But it's like I say, my first instinct is just to go, well, they're going to put him with the Usos or pretend that he's related to Roman Reigns.
I really hope they don't.
And they'll wedge him in somehow that way.
He would be dreadful with the Usos.
Yeah, of course he would.
He'd be really good with Roman Reigns. I could see him working with Roman Reigns.
I don't know. I think he embarrasses Roman Reigns because he's so much better.
Oh, yeah, totally. But I could also just see him working with Roman Reigns. Like, I can almost see their styles meshing. I say, like, you've got Roman Reigns as kind of this huge powerhouse guy, and Samoa Joe's got some of the same powerhouse stuff, but also a more technical foundation. I think that kind of works together. It'd be interesting. Yeah.
I don't know.
Samoa Joe also is like kind of, or put Samoa Joe with him as like half manager kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. WWE is just that lazy with the way they create gimmicks now. I just see them putting like alligator teeth around his neck and grass skirts on him.
Yeah, but I don't think they do with the people who come up from NXT. Like, they didn't really do that to Neville. They only tweaked him a little bit. They didn't, apart from dropping his first name. They didn't really do that with Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens came up as the exact same character.
They put a stupid cape on.
They did.
But they got
a stupid cape on him and then put comic book stuff on his intro.
Now, the comic book stuff's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And also, the comic book stuff is only there because he's feuding with Stardust.
They put face paint and stupid shoulder pads on the Ascension.
Yeah, they did.
That's true. But I would argue like when the top, because the Ascension, although they were tag champions, never really felt like they were top guys in NXT, whereas like Kevin Owens did, Neville clearly did. And I think when it's the big boys come up, they seem to just package them very, very close to how they are. The only one I would have concern with actually coming up at any point soon is Hideo. I don't think he's going to come up for a while. Because I just don't know what you do with him, because his mic skills are just not strong enough, because he doesn't speak English well enough.
Yeah, I think, exactly that. I think the problem with Hideo is that he's not clear enough on the mic, which is obviously just because it's not his first language. You know, that's totally understandable, but he lacks that charisma that you need in the WWE.
Like, I imagine if he's speaking Japanese, he probably has it all, because it seems to be very, very popular in Japan, but...
That doesn't matter so much in Japan.
Well, I was going to say, but Japan is less promo heavy. But you still have to have that kind of charisma to make it work. Mm. And it is very clear that the only reason his speech is slightly halting is because it's just his second language. But we'll see. That is something they can work on, though. Like, language it's not easy, but it's a skill they can work on over time. Just pair him with Cesaro. Cesaro speaks enough languages to help him out.
Well, if you want to get some charisma from someone, maybe Cesaro isn't the best.
The Cesaro has oodles of charisma. Cesaro in a suit.
Cesaro in a suit looks fucking amazing.
And have you not seen that? That seems to be what he's wearing all the time on Raw. He always comes out in the suit, and I'm like, oh, I don't care about anything else. Cesaro's awesome.
Someone's clearly been listening to this podcast.
Yeah, Cesaro in a suit.
He said that like a year ago. Cesaro, he's put him in a suit.
Cesaro in a suit is so good. Just, oh man.
This is a bit weird, but yeah.
Oh, I love him. And also, his promos with, like, well, he's, the fact he's getting promo time with Seth Rollins and stuff is a really good sign for him. And also, promo like actively mocking Seth Rollins about how he goes on and on and on and on, which was so accurate.
I can't help, though, every time we're like halfway into this week's 40-minute long Cesaro match on Raw. I can't help but think.
He does put on long matches. It's awesome.
Yeah, I just can't help but think poor Tyson Kidd.
Yeah.
Because he's injured and now Cesaro's getting his big push. And he's obviously, Cesaro's running with it and doing fantastically. But what happens when Kidd gets better?
Does Kidd get better?
Yeah, he does.
He has to.
I'm not convinced. Have you seen the survival statistics for his injury?
Yeah, he'll be fine. Don't worry.
I'm not.
He will. He'll be back, but either Cesaro back down the bottom of the card and they'll be fine, or he'll be absolutely nowhere as he has been for the past
four
years.
I'm not convinced he comes back and wrestles. I don't think he's convinced he comes back and wrestles.
Yes, it will.
5% of people survive his injury.
Well, he did, so he'll come back.
And most of the people who have the surgery he had, like, come out of that with severe paralysis. The fact that he is able to walk is pretty much a miracle.
So, I didn't realize it was that serious.
Yeah, it's a really, really serious injury. It's incredibly serious. It's like a spinal fusion or something on the top two vertebra. Basically, the most serious neck injury you could have.
Oh dear.
Yeah, it's incredible. He posted like X-rays of it, and even as a layperson, look at the X-ray, you're like, oh yeah, that looks terrible. Like, that's really, really bad. Where he's just got like huge pins in his neck now, and I just don't see them. Like, it's going to definitely be a while, very minimum, it's going to be a long time before he's cleared to wrestle.
Shit, I didn't realize it was that bad.
At least a year.
It's a very, very serious injury. Yeah.
That's a real shame, because I think Tyson Kidd is one of the sort of best natural talents.
Oh, 100%. But I do think as well, if he's not able to wrestle at all again, they 100% just keep him on as a trainer. Like,
I really hope so. I really hope that if that's the case, that he just hangs about NXT.
You either bring him in as a trainer or you bring him in as a booker, not as an agent, sorry, because like a lot of people have spoken about his ability to put together matches. So yeah, you either bring him into NXT as a trainer or you put him on the road as an agent, one of the two, because he's apparently got like a lot of respect in the roster as well for a relatively young guy. So I think it would be...
Yeah, from watching the developmental stuff and the promos that they do around that, and even watching things like Total Divas, it seems like people go to him a lot when they need advice on mat skills.
Yeah.
I really didn't know it was that serious. I'm quite sad now.
Mm. He's very serious, but he's... the thing is, regardless of whether or not he wrestles, he's still alive, and he is still like... Given his condition, he is fit and healthy. Like, if you take away the fact that he is kind of, he's coming away from serious neck surgery, he's actually pretty fit and healthy. So, I think he probably is for the injury he had, he is in the pretty much the best possible shape you could be. So that's really good. And he's like, from the stuff that, if you follow him if you follow Natalia on Instagram, like the stuff she's been posting of him, he kind of looks like he's fine. Just obviously he can't wrestle at the minute. But beyond that, he seems like he's fine. He seems like he's perfectly able to get around by himself and not in any real, like, I can't do this or that kind of thing. So he seems like he's pretty good.
Hmm.
But I also really love the stuff they're doing with Cesaro and all the little tributes to him.
Yep.
It's make me happy.
When he wears his armband and does the sharpshooter and all that.
Yeah,
stuff.
Exactly. The only slightly disappointing, the only bit that makes you slightly sad is I think he probably hits the sharpshooter like better.
Oh, I think Cesaro does everything better than anyone.
I think it's the only thing that makes you feel slightly bad for Tyson Kidd is you're like, oh, he does, yeah, because he's. No, I don't know if the sharpshooter itself is better, but he's like he's transitioning into it in cool ways.
Yeah,
like from the swing or from. Did you see like where there was the roll up? When Rollins rolled him up, he managed to turn that into a sharpshooter, which was just insane. Like, I've never seen anyone do that. It was absolutely crazy. But we should move on to the main card at SummerSlam. And the talk of Cesaro, he's facing Kevin Owens. At SummerSlam.
So Kevin Owens has got two big matches in two nights.
Yep. Awesome. And he's going to lose them both.
I don't know. This is a tough one to call. I think it's a really tough one.
It is. I don't know which way
they're building both guys up, so it wouldn't surprise me if it was a screwy finish, to be honest.
Yeah, Kevin Owens, you can't help but think it's going to be a screwy finish. Kevin Owens is king of screwy finishes.
Yeah. But my worry, I'm looking forward to this match, but my worry is, like what I mentioned earlier, is Owens' lack of psychology. For me, it's hurting these matches in the past few weeks. I'm getting a bit bored with the big move, big move, big move style has. And quite a lot of people in WWE has now. I prefer the old style. I don't know if this sounds a bit old fogey, but
you do sound like
the
an
old style wrestling. Yeah, they're like the old style proper wrestling. A bit of psychology in there. You work a body part, the guy makes a comeback and everything. I'm kind of missing that in the past few months. No, you're getting that anymore.
Yeah, it's like I saw somebody, I can't remember who it was, but I saw somebody on Twitter talking about pro wrestling's about building a story and making people feel an emotion. And this is awesome is not an emotion.
No. And if I was a wrestler, I would not be wanting this is awesome chanting at me in my match. The crowd should be doing one of two things. They should be booing you or they should be chanting your name for you to come back or win.
Mm-hmm.
Chanting this as awesome at you means effectively nothing.
Yep.
In terms of what the psychology you're actually supposed to be trying to achieve, having people chant this is awesome or we are awesome is what the crowd sometimes do because they get so into themselves. That isn't what you want in your match.
No, it's true.
And it's really starting to bother me in the past few weeks. It just every match is just the big move spot fest. And it is awesome to watch. I want some proper wrestling every now and again.
See, tag team matches still manage to do psychology, though.
But it's the same match every time.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah.
There's different ways to do a tag match, but there seems to be only one way to do it in WWE.
Yeah.
Badly.
Yeah.
But right. Do we do,
effectively, yes.
Do you think Kevin Owens or Cesaro is going over here?
If I had to pick one, I'd say Owens.
Beta?
I think Owens, but it's not in any way, shape, or form clean.
Yeah, yeah. I would agree. I see, I think not clean, and I would actually say Cesaro via DQ, but Kevin Owens doesn't tend to get himself disqualified, which I actually like. As a heel, he doesn't really get himself disqualified. He just does other heelish things, which is quite refreshing.
He might walk away, though.
He could
walk away. Might be like a countout.
It's nice to see a heel using some heel tactics every now and again.
Yeah, he could walk away and then come back and attack Cesaro in classic Kevin Owens style.
Yeah.
And then go for the apron powerbomb.
Yeah.
Which, that move looks fucking awful to take.
Oh, it's the hardest part of the ring you're getting slammed against. Yeah.
But the thing is, like, he always hits it right on the edge of it. And I'm just like, there's no, how are you protected? This looks awful. How are you protecting that guy? This just looks like you're going to hurt him. And it's, yeah, every time he hits that, which I'm glad he doesn't hit it super frequently. The only downside to that, I guess, is if he hits it, like, it's normally a note that guy's going to be out for at least a few weeks, because that's...
And hasn't he tended to be, he only ever hits it on people that he's worked with a bit?
Yeah, but he's worked with Cesaro a bit now.
Yeah, I suppose. Suppose so. Mm. Yeah, he might do.
I like this feud, and
it is. It's quite, it feels very natural as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, it's the two indie type guys coming together. Mm. But
I'd like to see them do an entire promo, like in ring on mic promo in French with each other, because it's their native language. Yeah. Both of them.
What I really like with it though, is...
and the crowd would fucking hate it. Maybe they could do it in Montreal at some point.
What I really like with it though is that they are throwing other people into the feud in a natural way. So they're not just like, oh, hey, Cesaro is facing this guy this week. It's like Cesaro is facing Seth Rollins because that's a really prestigious thing. It's like they're, or he's facing Rusev, etc. But they still feel natural.
I
like,
don't know. This week they did a tag team match with Randy Orton and Shane.
Yeah, that was a failing. But I think in general, it's kind of felt when they faced other guys, it still felt like it was interwoven into the feud in a,
yeah,
in like, hey, he's facing this other guy this week and that for some random reason, and then Kevin Owens is going to appear.
Yeah, because like, it kind of felt like it branched off from a feud that Kevin Owens was trying to have with Rollins.
Yeah, or was, it was also from the Cena stuff.
The Cena stuff,
where it really came from. But yeah, it's interesting. I think
anyone Kevin Owens isn't feuding with?
No, Kevin Owens is feuding with everyone simultaneously. It's fantastic. Kevin Owens just hates the world. Kevin Owens is fuck all of you. You're not Kevin Owens.
That's good though. That's good for his character.
Yeah,
that's
brilliant. It fits his character absolutely perfectly. Moving on, Team Bella versus Team Bad versus PCB.
they've had a name change.
I really want to like the Divas Revolution, but I don't.
I know. Well, it's decent.
What you
need is a personal storyline between these people.
Yes,
I don't care about teams of people that are randomly thrown together.
It does very much feel like it. Well, because it's what happened. Stephanie McMahon just went, here are some teams, fight.
Yeah, I think that it's strange teams. There's too many people involved. And they haven't picked a reason for why they're feuding, or they haven't picked a cohesive like gimmick per team or name for each team. It's a bit like Alicia Fox was only thrown in with the Bellas 2 weeks before everybody else was moved up. And Team Bad is just like, that name is bad. And now the others like Paige, Charlotte and Becky are calling themselves Team PCB.
It does have a different name, but
no, there's no team. It's just PCB.
Oh god, they were beforehand. They called themselves the Submission Sorority,
which was a bad idea.
Yeah, which is awful.
Someone clearly didn't Google that before they put that on TV.
Nope,
because that is a very bad website.
Yep.
Yeah.
To be fair, they could have kept it because they actually like just trashed it in the search term in like something like 2 days. They just absolutely overtook it by miles. But yeah, you still don't really want that association.
No, not for like not for a family business. No,
exactly.
But having said that, I think with the exception of maybe Alicia Fox and definitely Tamina, I think the Bellas have done a bit better. And I think everybody else involved in that, this whole thing, is fantastic. I think Tamina is a bit of a risk in the ring because she still seems a bit rusty since she came back from her injury.
But Tamina is really quite awful when you think how good she should be.
Yeah.
She is pretty bad in the past, at least in the past year. She's not.
Well, this is, I don't know what she was like before she was out injured, but she since she's come back from her injury, she's looked dangerous.
She wasn't great, but you could see something that might come through there. And obviously, she's got the family legacy, but they looked like there was something there that would end up being quite promising. Yeah. But in the past year, she has been absolutely awful. And Alicia Fox has always looked dangerous to me.
Mm-hmm.
The thing with Tamina, though, is I think Tamina's fine purely as an enforcer, and also if you just require her to super kick people.
Okay, it's time for the super kick, Tamina, come on.
She's perfect at that, but if you had to put her in a match, it's not...
She's really good at super kicking people. I want to see her and Luke Harper in a super kick fight.
I was watching old SummerSlams this week, and I realised something. Nobody does that super kick like Shawn Michaels.
Exactly. No. I hate that everyone does a super kick now.
But also,
it feels so damn lazy.
But also,
that is Shawn Michaels' move. No one else should do it.
But the pile driver was that. The DDT was that. The DDT was Jake the Snake Roberts' move. It's just because you're from a different era. It's because you grew up with Shawn Michaels. But people who grew up with Jake the Snake Roberts, like Steve Austin, are going, why is everyone hitting the DDT? It's terrible. That should be a finish.
No, yeah, I agree with that. No, but no one has unique movesets that are protected. Everyone just does the same thing now.
Yeah.
It's quite frustrating to watch, because I guarantee you, if you watch the episode of Raw, you'll see at least 4 super kicks.
But that's fine, because I like super kicks.
I like them when they're done by the right person.
Yeah, I like good super kicks. But that was the striking thing. There was like a little promo package that they'd cut together for SummerSlam like 2005 or something I was watching. And it was like, it showed like 4 or 5 Shawn Michaels super kicks in succession, and he just hits every single one perfectly.
Yeah.
And it's like, you see Luke Harper do that, and yeah, he's good. And like maybe 50% of the time he's really good, but maybe 10% of the time he doesn't quite do it properly.
But also, I would argue that the switch in music is a slightly different move to a regular super kick.
Well, the no.
Because if you look at how Shawn Michaels hits them, compared to how, and I don't just mean like PMW, how pretty much anyone else is a super kick. They are a slightly different move because he kind of hinges his knee a little bit.
I think you're stretching for differences there.
Yeah, Shawn Michaels should be the only one that has it. Count how many people in this card hit super kicked.
Two people in this card hit super kicks.
Dolph Ziggler.
Dolph Ziggler does. Rusev isn't really a super kick because he always just ends up kicking them in the chest.
Tamina.
And Luke Harper.
I've seen Owens do one.
Owens can do any move. That seems to be Kevin Owens' forte.
Neville?
Does Neville hit super kicks?
I'm sure I've seen him hit one at some point.
Yeah, but he doesn't hit it. We're talking about people who hit them regularly.
Right, okay.
So I don't think you can count Owens because he doesn't hit it regularly. Neville does not hit it as a regular part of his offense.
Okay, right, I'll give you those. But people do hit it, that's the point. And that was the thing we were talking about last week, that everyone just does the same moves and it's annoying.
Yeah. But I still like Luke Harper's super kick. It looks awesome.
But we were talking about divas.
Oh, actually, wait, no. The Usos
There's a have, Diva Revolution.
The Usos have the best super kicks. Anyway.
I can't fault most of the women involved in this. I don't get the booking. I don't...
No, it's weird booking.
I think it's going to... spin off into some good proper feuds that mean something eventually. Yeah. But at the moment, I'm not feeling...
Well, I think the problem they have is that there's, like I say, there's too many people involved. I think it's going to take a year for actual feuds and proper relationships to develop within this huge mash of people.
Yeah, because this is going to go to Survivor Series, you can tell. Yeah.
Also, is Nikki Bella going to hit the fuck... is going to defend the fucking belt at some point?
She is going to lose it the night after SummerSlam, is my guess.
No.
No.
She's either going to lose it, or she's going to beat AJ's title reign.
They're going for the record.
just to
unless she get injured, she's getting the record.
Yeah, just to say fuck you to AJ, basically.
The only other thing about this the Divas big mashup match is that I think the people involved that are supposed to look really strong, the Bellas, who I think have developed quite a lot and are doing reasonably well at the moment, to give them their dues. But I think if you put them in a ring with Naomi and Sasha Banks and Paige and Charlotte and even Becky Lynch, they look bad. And
because they are bad.
Well, the same thing applies for Alicia Fox and Tamina to a greater extent. I think that they look really bad.
Also, I would not put Naomi on the list of good people.
No. Oh, Naomi's really good.
No, you just like Naomi. Naomi is not a technically skilled worker. Also, her finishing move is dreadful.
She's very athletic.
She's a good athlete and she can do some nice moves, but she's not believable for me.
Also, if you want to talk about people with ring psychology, like Sasha Banks, Paige, Charlotte, and Becky Lynch.
Yeah.
If you're moaning about lack of ring psychology, those four have it in spades.
I felt quite bad for the Divas division because it was basically in one night, everyone else got wiped out and basically they went, this is how you should be doing it.
Yeah.
And I felt quite sorry for people like Natalya and like even people like Summer Rae and all, like Emma. Who came up last year.
I feel so sorry for Emma, because Emma is very good.
Like a year ago, she came up and got nothing. I felt sorry for like the existing Divas. But you can quite clearly see that there's a big talent gap.
See, I kind of think, I think Natalya could compete with like Paige and Charlotte and Becky Lynch.
Those, for sure.
Oh, Natalya is one of the best.
Natalya's good enough. I think the ones that aren't good enough need to get out of the business. I think Summer Rae has no business being in a wrestling ring whatsoever.
She's fine as a valet, but I don't see her ever as a great wrestler. I thought she had something, but I've not really seen anything from her.
This is just the thing. I think if you say, well, she's fine as a valet, then what purpose is there being served with her being there? I think, in general, female valets in the Summer Rae mold are no longer needed in 2015.
Mm. For the Summer Rae character now, I agree. I don't know if she can do anything more, though. We haven't really seen anything more other than what she's done.
The only, I would argue against myself with Lana, because she started as a valet and is developing into a wrestler, and she might do quite well, I think.
Right.
I think she might have some ability.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Anyway, who's winning in this tag team elimination match, which is a weird match?
Team Bella. No, Team Bad.
Is it a tag team elimination whereby if one person on the tag team gets in, they're all out?
It's single full elimination.
Right, okay.
So it's really weird.
Well, that's kind of a shame, but also kind of good. Otherwise, the match would have to last like an hour and a half.
Yeah. Even the crowd were turning on it on Raw the past week, which I felt sorry for.
It's because there's no plot.
No, that's agree. There's a great woman here, and that first segment when it brought them up was phenomenal. But you're right, there is nothing here.
You need it, like, it doesn't matter if they put on good matches if there's no story connecting those matches. Like, if there's no story connecting it, what's the fucking point? I also got, speaking of Summer Rae, she is the fake Lana in the Dolph Ziggler versus Rusev feud thing.
Is Dolph Ziggler the biggest dick in the world?
Yeah.
Thank you. It totally is.
How is Dolph Ziggler the face in this feud? Is he face anymore?
Lana broke up with Rusev and Ziggler started going out with her and then decided to snog her in front of...
Yeah, he's floating it in front
every
of
fucking week.
That's really uncomfortable when they do that as well, isn't it?
Yeah, he deserved...
It's really cringy.
Yeah, he deserved his throat getting...
But the thing is then putting like Summer Rae with Rusev was clearly an attempt to make Rusev seem more heelish because I think he was getting too close to a face turn.
Love Rusev.
Everyone does, yeah.
It is hilarious. See when the flag dropped last week with his face on it.
That was amazing. That was amazing. Also, I like that it's a Bulgarian flag now.
Laughing.
It's Bulgarian flag now, which makes me happy.
Yeah, Bulgarian flag with his face on it. Yeah. It's just the funniest thing ever. Apart from when he came out in a tank at WrestleMania.
Rusev's great.
Came out on top of a fucking tank.
Rusev is just the best.
Yes,
but I don't like the Summer Rae involvement in this because she just feels really ancillary.
Oh yeah, but it makes Rusev just look like a pathetic bastard.
Yeah, exactly.
And I love it. I love pathetic bastard Rusev.
No, see, right? I would just love it if Rusev was basically just doing what he was doing, like the fish. Stuff like the fish is amazing.
That is not amazing, but it's so stupid.
I thought we were going to get a Rusev face turn.
They were so close, and they were like, and here's Summer Rae. Like, oh, this is, they're clearly going to try and keep him heel. It makes me sad. Also, he seems to be losing a lot more now, which is also sad.
Yep.
It's not sad. I prefer this Rusev character over the borderline racist stereotype character.
Oh, no, but I think you can shift his character and not have him lose all the time.
No, I think it feeds into the pathetic bastard.
Yeah, I think the problem is that I think he could lose all the time if he was building up to a face turn. But yeah. I think having him as this big scary monster and then he loses is the same problem that they had with Bray Wyatt last year.
Hmm.
You know, you can't fear him because everybody beats him.
Also, Dolph Ziggler.
Dolph Ziggler was awesome.
Dolph Ziggler and Coldfish Liner were awesome. Don't care what you say, Colin, they were amazing. That was probably one of the best comedy sketches in Raw in ages.
I would like to see Dolph Ziggler and Lana adopt Dolph Ziggler and start bringing him to the ring, like the British Bulldog used to do with Winston.
That would be great as like...
Ah, Winston.
How amazing would that be as like a counter to Rusev's mockery, like just to adopt the dog? That'd be brilliant.
I won't say anything Dolph Ziggler does now is good because I hate him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's annoying me now.
I quite like Dolph Ziggler. I like the fact that he sort of seems to be straddling that very thin line between being a normal human being and being some sort of weird 1980s, like hair metal band. He comes out in eyeliner and like denim waistcoats and stuff.
What I really like with Dolph Ziggler is the fact that he was like, WWE are criminally misusing me and my contract's about to expire, so what I'm going to do is re-sign with WWE. That was a point where I was like, this feels dangerously close to an abusive relationship.
Yeah, he's got a lot of work to do himself before he gets to the main event, and I don't agree with the thing that it's just WWE misusing him. He's missing quite a lot.
Oh no, I don't think it is just WWE misusing him, but I also think if WWE is going to so clearly misuse him, there's no real driving force for him to try and improve.
I had to laugh because I think it was WWE.com was posting, guess who's back, guess who's back on Raw, and the big like headline was that Lana's boyfriend is back. You don't even like, get a name anymore, you're relegated to Lana's boyfriend.
I can't feel bad for him with that.
I felt bad for him when I seen that. I was like, oh dear. But now I'm annoyed with Dolph Ziggler.
But who wins this?
He's a dick, and he's not a face. Come on, he's not a face, is he?
No, but Kev Rusev isn't really either. It's a very confusing feud.
Yeah. Who wins?
I wish I cared.
Yeah.
Peter?
Probably Ziggler.
All right.
Just because of the way it's built. Who cares?
Yeah. All right. I'm thinking that a lot of this. I don't really care.
All right, next, the match I am most excited for. Stephen Amell and Neville versus Stardust and King Barrett. I'm actually genuinely excited for this. I think it's going to be awesome.
I think it'll be good because Amell does like the free run and everything.
Yeah,
so
he's clearly, and he's been like properly training for this, like working with WWE to like actually get himself in like good ring shape.
Watched Arrow?
I've watched some of Arrow, yeah.
Some of the training sequences in Arrow where he is doing the training things are like almost unbelievable.
Oh, he's
very, very.
Yeah, he's crazy.
Man.
He does like all the training sequences are just him doing it. And apparently he does like 90% of his own stunts. Like basically the only stuff he doesn't do is the stuff insurance won't let him do. He pretty much does everything else, which is just awesome for a lead actor to be so keen to do all of it himself.
I do, however, think that if he gets in the ring with King Barrett, King Barrett could tear his arms off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But did you see King Barrett as the Cosmic King?
Yeah.
Yeah, with awesome. His new shoulder pads.
Yeah. I was actually like, oh, why are they throwing Barrett in here? I guess because they're going to get a tag match, so it's really easy to protect ammo. Okay, whatever. But then, and so I was kind of like really down on Barrett until they had that promo. I was like, this is brilliant now. Perfect. I love that. And keep these guys, like, keep Stardust and King Barrett together. After SummerSlam, keeping together as like a heel comic book tag team, as like a supervillain tag team, would be
because
amazing.
Because it works.
Yeah, that's so good.
Barrett can carry that character as a comic book villain.
Yeah.
And it works.
Yeah, it's great. He, and like, the thing is, because he's doing the exact same character with, and they've just reframed the character, and by reframing the character, it works perfectly, whereas it was dreadful before.
Yep.
And now it's amazing. I love it. I love it so much.
I think the weirder inclusion in this is Neville.
Yeah, but you, like I say, you have to have a tag match because it's just too hard to protect Amel otherwise.
And it's a red arrow and a green arrow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I suppose.
And you get cool nicknames and the cool comic things. And how good is Stardust, though?
Brilliant. He's amazing.
He is the weirdest fucker I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
I think Stardust is a great character, but I also think that Cody Rhodes is fantastic.
Did you read, did you read, there's a little thing he wrote after...
Oh, it was his wife that wrote it, I think.
No, he wrote it, but his wife posted it.
Ah, right, okay.
But yeah, the blog post, which, like, this whole feud is his tribute to his dad, which is just really nice.
Yeah.
Just like, finish what you start, kid.
Yeah.
Which is, also, it's just brilliant advice from Dusty Rhodes from Beyond the Grave. Like, finish what you start. And it's perfect. And this feud is actually just one of the best fleshed out feuds in WWE right now, which for a feud involving a celebrity is absolutely incredible that this is just so well done. Like, I don't know who's writing this because it doesn't feel like it's a WWE normal writing team writing this at all. It feels like Amel has brought writers from Arrow in with him or something. And also, like, Amel hopping the barrier and hopping the ropes, dude looks like a wrestler. Like, the way he hopped those ropes, he looked so comfortable.
Yeah, I hope that he has had plenty of time, like, learning technique and stuff in the ring. Yeah. I hope that they've given him his due there, because otherwise it might just end up with him standing on the apron for the whole
match. I think they've definitely given him stuff, because he's the people have been kind of working stuff backwards with this and looking at it, and it looks like he might have been training with them since March. There's been some hints that he's, like, been doing, building up for something. And so people have, like, been piecing together stuff he's posting on social media, etc. And yeah, it looks like he's been doing it since about March. The other really cool thing in this as well is, like, he put up a, I can't remember if it's a t-shirt or a hoodie, like, through his own website, with, like, some of the proceeds going to charity. It turns out the only stuff that wasn't going to charity was because it's, like, it's got Neville on it. Not Neville, sorry, it's got Stardust on it. It's like Stardust versus Amel. It's like a half-half t-shirt or hoodie or something. And he was like, my cut of the proceeds is going to go to charity, but obviously WWE have their licensing costs, etc. But WWE waived all of that because it was a charity thing. They are, like, the day after we put it up, they were like, oh no, it's cool, we're just going to waive all our fees. And so he's got a cool t-shirt with 100% of it going to charity, which is pretty awesome for WWE to do that.
Yep.
Which is, you're like, yeah, why wouldn't they? It's no skin off their nose. Like, a couple of hundred people are going to buy that shirt, max. What the fuck do they care? I suspect that, I don't know. Depending on if Amel's going to work more, if Amel's going to work more, Stardust wins this, but like with a really screwy super villain finish. If he's not going to work more, I think he wins it.
Yeah.
I know. I think Amel's got it to get the pin.
Yeah. But like, again, like, I think it depends on if it's just at one show or not. If it's just for SummerSlam, he gets the pin. I think if it's going to go beyond SummerSlam, which I guess he would be super up for, given that he is like a lifelong WWE fan, then I think that Stardust maybe goes over in like some really screwy way. So that'd be pretty cool. There's a rumor that he, like, that's coming from Amel that someone else from the cast is going to show up. And so, yeah,
interesting. He's not that big a celebrity. So if you bring him, he's the main guy in that show. If you bring someone else up, is anyone going to care?
I think so.
I didn't even know who Stephen Amell was until he appeared on Raw.
Lots of wrestling fans are saying that, but he's pretty big. Like, he's got the biggest show on his network.
Yeah, but he's not really had anything else, has he? So to me, he's not actually that big a celebrity.
No, but I think you would probably say the same about most people in wrestling as well. Like, the idea of Amel is not to appeal to people who like wrestling. The point of him is to appeal to people who like Arrow and get them to watch wrestling.
Oh yeah, but like normally when they bring in a big celebrity, he's a big celebrity. I don't really see Amell as a big celebrity. He's not Mickey Rourke. He's not like a guy like that coming in.
No, but I think he's big enough.
Yeah, like I don't think anyone will watch that. Doesn't watch already.
No, they are 100% people are watching.
You think
that if you look at the social media reaction to him showing up on Raw, there were people who watched all of Raw who have never watched wrestling before because they wanted to see his appearance.
You think? Because
no, that's there, guess, there was like that was
I guess like 3 million viewers. So
yeah, but that's 3 million people. Like he.
I'm not going to tune
it. Seriously, like, if you look at his, like the social media reaction to him being on Raw was huge. He's got just really hardcore fans.
Yeah?
Yeah, he's an attractive male. He's got really hardcore female fans, basically. He basically does a lot of stuff on social media where he interacts with his fans, and a lot of them seem to be women because he's shirtless and arrow quite a lot of the time. So that seems to be a big draw, which maybe that's a little bit sexist. But he, yeah, that. From what I can tell, he's got a lot of female fans who a lot of them tuned in to Raw to see him and were kind of saying that they were a lot of them were saying that they were going to buy SummerSlam. This is based on like people on Reddit talking about the social media reaction. Apparently, it was a pretty big social media reaction to him. So
there you go.
Yeah. Like it's a reasonably big show. I think 3 million is big enough to.
Yeah, and if it's a different audience and if he does attract like. A sort of a young, maybe largely female audience in some regards. Although I think that probably the viewership of the Green Arrow or of Arrow would tend to be probably male mostly.
I think the viewership is, but I think the people are like, I think his hardcore fans are more skewing female.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? Rather than just generic fans of the show.
But I do think that Chris. You're right because he will bring viewers, but I think that Colin's also right in that he's not a massive celebrity. You know, he's not like, I can't think of a massive celebrity now that's done. He's not like Dennis Rodman when he appeared on the WCW.
No, I don't think he's a massive celebrity, but I also think he's the right kind of celebrity.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and working him into a little storyline, I think is the way to do it rather than just go, oh, and by the way, we managed to convince somebody to show up at WrestleMania.
Because I don't think those are actually interesting when it's just like, here is generic, even if they're super famous, it's like, here are generic celebrities. That doesn't interest me at all. But like, here are celebrities who are actually involved in the product and are actually going to go out of their way to promote the fact that on the product, like on Raw this week. That's awesome.
Although speaking of celebrity appearances. Speaking of celebrity appearances,
John Stewart. Yes. Yeah. Oh,
I would kind of like it if Ronda Rousey just came out and broke his arm.
Oh, that'd be great. But ignore that. John Stewart.
John fucking Stewart.
It's going to be awesome.
Yes.
Love John Stewart.
Love John Stewart. I miss John Stewart already. It's only been a week.
Make him GM. Make John Stewart GM. He's not doing anything else now.
No, he's unemployed.
Be amazing.
Peter, you don't seem to be up for this.
Yeah, I like John Stewart. I'm not sure that his hosting capabilities for SummerSlam are going to be really used particularly well.
Ah, probably not. They're terrible at this sort of thing. But I think
he'll come out and do a 15-minute segment and then you won't see him again.
No, he's going to cost Seth Rollins the WWE title. He hates Seth Rollins.
He's not going to cost Seth Rollins the WWE title.
He's got beef with Seth Rollins.
He's got beef with Seth Rollins, but they're not going to have that momentous moment for John Stewart.
He kicked Seth Rollins in the balls last time.
He did.
And that's pretty great.
I hope they have another little confrontation.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And also, like, that was the best celebrity promo that has ever been cut in WWE.
You can tell when people are fans, and you can see Amell's a fan, and you can see John Stewart's a fan.
The fact that John Stewart sat down in the ring with Seth Rollins for, like, a 10-15-minute segment and was comfortable and confident and funny and had lines that were clearly his lines because they were his style, but were still relevant to the product was amazing. Like the fact that he, do you remember the line about the poster boy?
Oh yeah.
It's like, you might be the poster boy, but the thing about posters is they get taken down eventually. That's a great line. That's an amazing line. And just confronting Rollins about the fact that like, he never had to work for anything, which is something that no one else had ever really confronted him about. and just giving Rollins so much shit, which no other like guest would ever do, because they don't tend to know enough.
The thing was, he wasn't there to promote anything either. He's not here to promote anything. He's just there.
He's just there because he fucking loves wrestling. Abel's not really there to promote anything. Like, the next season of Arrow doesn't start for a bit. He's just there because he's like, man, I fucking love wrestling. This is pretty cool that I get to do this.
Yeah. Even Daniel Bryan, when he showed up in Raw the other day, was only there to promote things.
Yeah. Like,
his book and Tough Enough.
But yeah, whereas, like, Abel and John Stewart, they're super into this, man. It's great. Yeah,
well, John Stewart's son is like a massive fan.
Yeah, but also it's clear that John Stewart is a huge fan, given the amount of WWE references on the Daily Show, even before he was even vaguely involved with this.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Rollins showed up on his last week as well.
Yeah, he did.
I thought that was nice.
Yeah, it was. And did you see there was a Instagram or something afterwards where they gave him like a WWE title belt?
Yeah,
and it was the caption on it was John's not selling out, he's buying in, which made me laugh. I was like, "Yep, he knows what he's talking about." But I think hopefully they'll find a way to use him well. I think guest host is really difficult, but unless you give
him a microphone and let him work it out himself, I think that he can use himself really well.
Just give him like a 15-minute segment.
Yeah, I think if they start trying to write things for him, it'll end up being awkward.
No, see, I think what happened last time he was on, I reckon they did write for him, and I reckon they gave him, they probably had a script for him and also bullet points, and he basically probably tore the script up and went, I've got this, guys. Like, I know what I'm fucking doing. I've been doing this way longer than new people have been doing anything. You were all in nappies when I started doing this, so go away.
I miss John Stewart already.
Yeah, he is great. But I loved the last thing of him and Stephen Colbert was perfect. We got the tag match, which I don't. Oh man, I wish I cared about this tag match.
Which one?
The Primetime Employers versus the Los Matadors versus the Lucha Dragons versus the New Day. Oh god, why?
New Day win.
Peter, do the New Day win this? Please tell me yes, because I like the New Day.
No.
Oh, no. But it's a New Day. Yes, it is.
They're dancing now.
How funny is Big E's dancing?
Big E's dancing is amazing.
It is ridiculous.
It's amazing.
He looks like a giant man baby that just wiggles.
I don't like Big E.
No, you're wrong.
I don't like him.
Big E is incredible.
Kofi's all right. I don't like Big E. I think Xavier Woods is fantastic.
Big E is great at shouting.
I just don't really like him.
And also, Big E, like, this is me reaping. Reaping. That's great. That's great stuff. Mm. And also him just shouting at JoJo backstage is always hilarious. And that's made me feel really bad for JoJo.
JoJo's tiny. She's so small. Tiny human.
Yeah.
Does anybody give a shit about this? I don't like...
I only give a shit about the Primetime Players care about. If this was Primetime Players versus New Day, I'd be really invested in this. But because it's got the other two teams, I don't really care.
I don't mind the Lucha Dragons.
I think the Lucha Dragons are fantastic. They've not been utilized very well since they've been brought up. But
no, but what is the point in Los Matadores?
I have no idea.
What is actually the point?
They're
a fourth tag team, basically.
I think that must just be it. I think the best thing you can say about those two is that they're keeping El Torito in a job.
Yeah.
I like El Torito. El Torito's all right.
Yeah.
He did have the match of the year last year.
Yeah.
And VLC. Yeah. But I don't care about this at all. I like the Primetime Players.
I like the Primetime Players, but they are a little bit one-dimensional. Darren Young doesn't get to do an awful lot, does he?
Because he can't really.
He gets to dance.
It's like Darren Young comes in for 10 minutes and gets beaten up, and then he makes a tag out to Titus, and Titus O'Neil just comes in and tears people apart.
Titus O'Neil is the greatest thing ever, though.
Although Darren Young gets to hit his knee thing. His knee thing looks pretty sweet.
I love Titus O'Neil. I think he's like...
Titus O'Neil's great.
I think he's hilarious. I think he's fantastic on the mic. Obviously,
the best element of Titus O'Neil is just him ragdolling people around the ring.
Yeah. Doing the gator bark.
Yeah, that's pretty great as well. But it's just the fact that Titus O'Neil does not appear to be wrestling. Titus O'Neil just catches people and then throws them. It's like, wrestling is complicated. What if I just throw you halfway across the ring? Nah, probably do.
It's always like, you see, like, if if you ever like a toddler's birthday party, it's like an adult in the ball pool playing yes. with a group of toddlers.
It is. Just, it's quite particularly with like Xavier Woods and Kofi Kingston. He's just like
catching them and throwing them.
I care not for you. Brilliant.
I wish Titus and he was 10 years younger.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
He'd be the greatest thing ever.
Be amazing.
Yeah.
And also, he's just like the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah.
He's just amazing. I love him so much.
Yeah, but he kind of, my point is that he kind of overshadows Darren Young's contribution to that team.
That's because they're I think I could overshadow Darren Young's contribution to that team.
I think Darren Young's all right. He's not great, but he's okay.
Yeah, I just don't think he does very much. But I think least, his role is not to do very much.
At least he's not one of Los Matadores.
I also think at least they're not portraying him as stereotypically gay.
Oh, yes. I forgot he was the openly gay wrestler.
Which is kind of a good
still
thing.
Still the only one, isn't he?
Yeah, but yeah. I think it's a good thing that you have forgotten that he's openly gay, if you see what I mean. Like,
yeah.
Because they're not just using that for capital, which would be... Even oh, 5 years
Jesus
ago.
Christ.
Even 5 years ago, they would have done that, I think.
Yeah, probably.
They did turn on face and gave him a little push last year, the day after it came out.
Oh,
so they did try and capitalize on it, but he did get injured. So I wouldn't give WWE too much credit for not trying to capitalize it. They did try.
Yeah, and I wouldn't speak too soon either. I could still see, like, if things don't go well with the primetime players, I could still see next year him coming out like gold dust in the mid-90s.
Although it was kind of weird that Stephanie in an interview said that Darren Young's character isn't gay.
Yeah.
That was kind of a weird thing.
There's no reference to it. There's nothing about his sexuality in his character.
Yeah, which I don't mind that. But for her to say his character isn't gay was just kind of weird.
Was that not, is she not just kind of saying that it doesn't matter if he's gay or straight because...
No, because that's not what she says. What she says is his character isn't portrayed as gay. Mm. And I was like, that's a concerning sentence in some ways.
Yeah.
Like, just... Yeah. Like, and also the fact is, because his sexuality doesn't matter, then just let his character be gay. If his sexuality doesn't matter, then why not just be like, oh yeah, his character's gay, but we don't, like,
care.
Ever talk
no,
about
business.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why she brought it up, because sexuality doesn't ever come up in wrestling.
I think she was
so...
asked a question, basically. I think she was asked a question about it because obviously he came out. So I think that was why. But it was just an odd response to that question. Just to be like, yes, he's openly gay, but we like his character isn't about that. Would have been a perfectly fine answer to that question.
Just but, not his character is not gay.
Yeah, but his character isn't gay. It's like, that was weird.
Yeah.
It's a weird answer to that question. That answer really worries me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... And also, did you remember the thing that was on... Like when he was on Swerved, and that he had a picture of his boyfriend, and his boyfriend's face got blurred out, and Darren Young got like pretty pissed about it. I think rightfully so as well, because
he has appeared. His boyfriend has appeared on episodes of other things. I think he was on Total Divas at one point.
Yeah, well, I think that's
accompanying him on red carpet.
Oh yeah, but I think that's why he's pissed that the photo was blurred out, because you're like, you're fine in some contexts, but not in others. And also, if he was straight and that was a picture of his girlfriend, they wouldn't have blurred that out, I can't imagine.
I don't know. They maybe have to secure image rights and stuff.
Oh, yeah, but I think they would have dealt with that before they aired the episode.
Probably. Yeah.
So, yeah. It's just... that, yeah, there's little tiny bits that worry me, but I think he's all right. He seems to be doing fine overall. I can't imagine they're really holding him down anyway. There's just little tiny bits that are just, I guess maybe just the overall culture of the WWE, because it is still a fairly old school culture.
Yeah. It's still run by Vince McMahon, who is old money American Republican. You know, I assume, I might be doing him a disservice, but I assume that his attitudes towards homosexual people are still a little bit behind the times. I would assume that, especially in that kind of business and where professional wrestling came from and the business that it is, like, it's only the mid-90s that Goldust was like a big heel because he was trying to kiss people.
See, I the thing though, I think with McMahon is I think that he has two categories of people. There is the one category of people who he is related to, and then all other people. There's basically, I think he sees society as people whose surname is McMahon and people whose surname is not McMahon, and also Shane McMahon.
Oh,
sure,
Shiny
he
Mac.
Hate Shane that much.
Little Shiny Mac.
I don't think he hates him, but I also think he's like, how dare you leave my company?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. When Vince dies and Shane comes back to run the company, I think that he should do another, like he should perform again. He should get in the ring because he was great.
Steph's going on it.
He's in his 50s, I'm sure.
He is in his, he was like in his 40s. He was turning 40 when he left.
Yeah. I don't think Shane McMahon should be falling off of 50.
Also, like, Steph is going to run the company.
And yeah,
Steph and Triple H are going to run the company. Yeah. And it might be good and it might be bad. But it's, like, Shane had some awesome ideas that they, like, Shane wanted to buy UFC when, like, UFC was an affordable prospect. And Vince was like, nah, we're not going to buy UFC. And then Shane wanted to buy ECW in whenever it was when, like, basically they killed ECW's deal with Spike, with TNN, sorry. And Shane was like, hey, we should buy them because we're basically fucking them over massively and we could run them as a separate company. And Vince was, again, like, nah, let's not do that.
It was Shane's idea to bring back ECW in 2005-2006 as an internet-only show.
Yep.
And like then, an NXT is now.
Yep.
And use it as a feeder and a slightly different brand. But they obviously did what they did to NXT, ECW.
Do you know what literally happened? Vince told him yes and then had a meeting that he was not invited to and set up the actual ECW.
Yeah, well, yeah. Because, well, TV channels started bidding on it and they're like, oh shit, we can make money off this as well.
It's just the fact that Shane was not invited to that meeting, I think, tells you a lot about Vince.
Yeah.
That Shane was told, yes, you've got the go ahead to run this project. And if it's like, come on, guys, we'll just let's go over here. Don't worry, Shane, you're definitely in charge of ECW. Quick, guys, close the door. Yeah.
Well, you might give us a couple million dollars for this crappy TV show on sci-fi. Okay. Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, I like ECW. I'm not going to say it's crappy.
No.
It was crappy when WWE brought it back.
I quite liked it for a while. It was a kind of NXT-ish. It had a little bit of the old ECW in it.
Well, it was okay because it was trying to be old ECW.
Mm. Once it got through that phase, you had a lot of the new guys coming through. So it was a little bit like NXT. Yeah. So it was. I did enjoy it.
The thing was, it was okay for a little bit, and then it really wasn't, and it was very, very bad.
But you had Christian as a champion. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was awesome.
You had like a four-setting match with William Regal on a pay-per-view, which wasn't cool.
They did, though, end up with Big Show as a champion.
Yeah.
Which is never a strong move.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Do you think Big Show won an IC title then? Moving along.
It's got to be Ryback and The Miz, and also Ryback's name is now The Ryback for some reason.
Really?
He keeps referring to himself as The Ryback.
That's because Daniel Bryan used to call him The Ryback all the time.
Yeah, it's just weird.
Do you know what I think happens in this match? I think The Miz creeps out with a belt.
Yeah.
No, give it to Ryback. Leave it on Ryback forever.
Oh, I genuinely don't care about any of this.
I think the Miz steals it somehow in a like a traditional sneaky Miz, like hiding under the ring for half an hour kind of way.
I like Ryback. Give it to Ryback. Have him feud with Kevin Owens. Done.
No.
I'll watch that.
I wouldn't. Give it to Miz. I don't like Miz, but...
I hate The Miz.
Yeah.
Such a prick.
I don't like Ryback winning
like,
all the
time. Ryback potentially has like some new stuff he could do with his title. The Miz has had it about 20 times.
Yeah, it keeps the pattern going, though.
Well, that's why this whole feud's a bit weird. And also, Ryback is essentially... he's a wrestler from like 1989.
Yeah, I like him.
That's all his character is and all his moveset is. And like Ryback is that. He is a 30-year-old wrestler. It's very weird.
But he's awesome.
Oh, come on. Miz hasn't held it since the 21st of September last year. That's quite long for him. We'll need to give him it soon or else I'll get worried.
Do you know what else I was thinking this week? I was watching Raw and we're talking about this match. I was thinking it's about time we had another Big Show turn. It's been about 10 months.
No, it hasn't.
since yeah, that's,
I guess it has.
Series.
It was in there.
Yes, it has, yeah. But he wasn't there for a lot of that. He just fucked off for a bit somewhere.
Well, been a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. God.
And he's no longer associated with the Authority.
Yeah, no, he's part of the Authority's extended family. That was on an episode of Raw.
Yeah. It's a bit weird, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty weird. But I think he's the same class as, like, the New Day, and that he is informally allied with them, but he's not regularly with them.
Which is odd, because he was regularly with them for, like, 3 months.
Yeah, but then he fucked off for a bit. And he came back, and he was like, I'm the Big Show. Yeah, right?
Yeah. Is that how it works? It's like he goes on holiday and comes back and somebody else is in his office.
Yeah. I imagine so.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I like the Big Show though, but maybe not turn him face. Maybe leave him with one character for a while. I know 10 months is for the Big Show, is a very long time to be heel. But I don't see what you do with him as face.
I don't see what you do with him at all. I think he's too old and too immobile now. He's like Mark Henry. They're just like, they're like dinosaurs. They don't have a place anymore.
Yeah. I haven't wrestled Kevin Owens.
Why?
I don't know.
Want Kevin Owens to wrestle everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just everybody against Kevin Owens in some kind of weird twist on the Royal Rumble.
Oh, could you
have Kevin Owens out?
Wait! But given
every 2 minutes a new opposition comes out, Kevin Owens does a pop up powerbomb, sends them away.
Given the amount of people Kevin Owens is feuding with, imagine if Kevin Owens comes into the Royal Rumble at like number 15 when the ring's pretty full.
Yeah,
like that's gonna be if Kevin Owens comes into like a fairly full Rumble, it's gonna be amazing. I can see him just getting kicked out in like 2 seconds. That's just because it wouldn't be a squash because it would just be like the whole ring turning to face Kevin Owens. I can imagine Kevin Owens just stepping back out over the top rope. It's like, I'll show myself out, shall I?
I'll get me coat.
Yeah, that would be great. Oh, not The Miz. I want Ryback to win, just as like he's not The Miz or The Big Show. That's my main criteria.
Pretty much, I think The Miz is probably going to win it. But I really struggle to care, which is a shame because the Intercontinental Championship, they were building to actually mean something for a little while.
Yeah, but then
Daniel Bryan got injured again.
Apparently he's cleared to return by like 4 doctors but WWE won't clear him. I don't think they want him to come back.
No, I just think they want to be really, like, really but sure.
He's been cleared by like 4 doctors at this point.
Hmm.
Surely, if there's 4 independent doctors saying, yeah, you're perfectly healthy, should probably bring him back.
But the problem is they didn't really know why he got injured what his injury was last time. Like, they've cleared him, but they were like, we think you were concussed. We don't know how you got a concussion.
Maybe it's just hard to fit him back in storyline-wise as well, though. Like, if Daniel Bryan... if Daniel Bryan comes back, then all of a sudden, nobody cares who's the Intercontinental Champion because it should be Daniel Bryan, and nobody cares who's the WWE Champion because it should be Daniel Bryan.
Mm.
You know, all of a sudden, the crowd only wants Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, I do wonder if he is just saying, like, if he's saying that he's not cleared. If he's just kayfabe not cleared, but he's actually fine, but he's just, or maybe it's the whole part of the Authority are holding him down storyline. Like, he's got all these other doctors telling him he's clear, but the Authority won't let him back.
I think you're thinking too much about that.
I think
WWE are just not wanting to let him come back yet.
I also think WWE are not letting him give interviews that they don't approve of.
Oh, yeah. There's that, but...
Yeah. Daniel Bryan returns as a heel and runs into this match. That's it. That's the result. We've also got the Randy Orton versus Sheamus. Oh, I don't care.
No, I don't care.
Randy Orton wins. There we go.
Randy Orton.
And then Sheamus cashes in.
Yeah, we'll deal with that in a minute. Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper versus Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose.
I don't care about this either.
Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose probably... No, Luke Harper and Bray Wyatt win because the third Wyatt family member who might be Dean Ambrose is revealed.
Who might be Dean Ambrose?
Yeah, I could see it being Dean Ambrose.
But you can't turn Dean Ambrose heel.
I could see it being Dean Ambrose, though.
No. It's going to be Bo Dallas.
Oh,
I could also see it being Bo Dallas. That would be awful.
No, that would be awesome.
No, I wouldn't.
Bo Dallas is great.
Has he taught you to believe? Is that why you like him?
It's all you got to do, Chris.
If that was all I had to do, he might pick up a win occasionally. And,
not
just appear as like, I'm going to talk and then the Rock's going to kick my ass.
Okay, but right, Bo Dallas is a motivational speaker, yeah? So yeah. He's like all about confidence, but he keeps getting beaten, so he's broken. So Bray Wyatt like breaks him further and then builds him back up into a member of the Wyatt family.
No, the actual perfect pitch I saw for Bo Dallas, and this would be genuinely amazing, is if you play Bo Dallas off as like he is now, where he thinks he's the face, and give him like a heel manager, and he wins because the manager cheats to win, but Bo never sees it. So Bo is like, oh yeah, I believed, so I won. Like, that would be amazing. If you gave him like, even like Zeb Coulter, just give him like some really heely manager who is just constantly hitting people over the head. Give him Paul Heyman, but bring Paul Heyman's phone back, like his giant 1980s phone. The Paul Lee Dangerously phone.
Yeah, Paul Lee.
Yeah. I don't know who the third Wyatt family members could probably be, but I imagine they...
Raven. I just hope it's Raven.
Oh, God, that'd be amazing. It was Raven.
The same gimmick, isn't it?
Oh, what if it was Raven? What about Raven?
Yeah, what about Raven?
Yeah. That'd be good. But then Raven usurps Bray Wyatt as the leader of the cult.
Yeah, Raven just takes over.
Yeah.
Of course.
I think the Wyatts win with, like, whoever third Wyatt family member is. Maybe it's Bray Dallas, I don't know.
Really? I don't think Roman Reigns has lost a match, maybe, like, ever at this point. When was the last time he lost a match?
He lost to Bray Wyatt last month.
Did he?
Yeah, at the pay-per-view, because Luke Harper attended Superkick.
Oh, yes.
Him.
Oh, yeah.
Luke Harper returned, threw him into the ring post and super kicked him, which did seem excessive, to be fair, and then chucked him back in the ring to get, like, Sister Abigail'd.
Yeah, I don't think you can kick Roman Reigns enough at the minute.
I like Roman Reigns, but...
I like Roman Reigns, but I don't like what they've done with him. And I think that over the past few months, when they've been trying to make him look powerful, he's looked really weak because he always bleeds. Mm. Roman Reigns always gets a mouthful of blood. He always whines about it.
I wish this feud had went out of the starter. As in, Wyatt was going after Reigns' family and Reigns gets total mental, super pissed and just destroys Wyatt and goes on a complete tear. But instead, we've got this shitty little tag feud, which I don't care about.
To be fair, like they won't, but if Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose came out and fulfilled their promise, which is we're going to war, like, that was the promo they gave, is that they're going to war. If they do that, I would be so on board. But they won't. It'll be a wrestling match. But if they did that, if they came out... No. But
I want fucking tanks and mortars and a
but you know what I mean, like...
AR-15, just come out.
You're not going to be a war. No, this is wrestling.
No, like, you know
why
what I mean?
Did I bear this wrestling show?
No, you know what I mean? Like, it's I want Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose to come out and, like, the match doesn't start. I want Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose to come out and just, like, come out wielding steel chairs and fucking beat the crap out of them. But that's not going to happen because what will happen is Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose will appear and then Dean Ambrose will start and he'll lock up with Luke Harper. And I will just be like, oh, there's so much potential. Why just book them beating the crap out of each other? It would be amazing.
Yes, this is the book. This is a standard wrestling feud, and it started off as something that could be really personal and turn into just a complete battle, and it's not. And it's crap.
Although I will say, I did.
And I feel sorry for Dean Ambrose because he deserves better.
This is just
a way to get Roman Reigns next to Dean Ambrose, so the crowd gets used to cheering when Reigns is in the ring.
It's true,
isn't it?
Yes.
But also, I did like Dean Ambrose proving how good of a friend he is to Roman Reigns by listing off all the stuff he knows about him. Mm. I actually thought that was a pretty funny promo. Where he was just like, oh yeah, he takes his coffee like this way and all that stuff. I actually thought that was a good promo. Okay, now the actual match is of importance because the rest of this card is junk. The title versus title match, John Cena versus Seth Rollins.
Weird.
Screwy finish. Sheamus cashes in.
Yeah, probably. I don't, because I don't see.
If you're telling me that at the end of SummerSlam, Sheamus is going to be the WWE champion, I am not happy.
Yes, yes. There's no other way out of this. To put the Miz on the corner. Cena's not going to win the world title. And if he does, he's going to lose it immediately. I think the way it's going down is Rollins will beat Cena and then Sheamus will cash in. Or Sheamus will do the weird thing that Rollins did at WrestleMania and cash in, make it a triple threat. But Sheamus can't win the US title type thing. He gets a pin, Rollins gets a pin, it'll be screwy as fuck, but it's not going to be clean.
I like the finish that I proposed last time, which I did steal from Reddit, where like it turns into a triple threat match. He pins John Cena, but that means he gets the US belt. Like, I would actually find that really entertaining. That was what they did. But they won't, because that would actually be an interesting way to book it.
The world does sound screwy with the contract, as in he only gets a world title, but he pins Cena for he gets a world title, then Rollins runs in and pins Cena and gets the US title. Someone really screwy.
Yeah.
I don't really understand this feud. I don't get it. It's just like they were stuck for Cena and Rollins to do and just chuck them together.
16 times, that's why.
Well,
even if he only gets it for like 10 seconds before Sheamus spins in.
Haven't made a big enough deal of that. They need to make that a big thing. John Cena, when he equals Ric Flair's record, it has to be probably at WrestleMania.
Although I would love that if it equals the record and then Sheamus cashes in and takes it off him like 10 seconds later. Like John Cena's like, yes, no. I've equaled Ric Flair's record, and Sheamus just appears and bro kicks him.
No way that ends with Sheamus leaving world champion is acceptable.
It's the only way it's going to end, I think.
Colin, don't fuck with me now. Come on.
Also,
I'm sorry.
Also,
it's the only way I can see it.
The really bad failed cash in, where because Randy Orton missed his cue the other week, was hilarious.
Yeah. So the referee's going, really not? And Sheamus is going, I want to cash in.
Yeah.
The referee's like, let's just stand over here for a while.
Yeah, I know. the two best kayfabe reasons I saw for that were, one is that the referee can't understand Sheamus's accent because he's so Irish. He's like, you want to do what now? And the other one was just the referee going, but Sheamus, Seth Rollins is on the floor unconscious. Cashing in would be unethical. Like, that would also be a good way of doing it. If that was the kayfabe reason, if everyone was like, but that's just not very fair on Seth Rollins, Sheamus. How dare you? What would your mother say? I don't know actually who wins the belt, but it's going to be a weird finish.
Yeah, I see Sheamus like, at the end of the night.
Yeah.
I think somebody, probably Seth Rollins, wins by disqualification because the championship can't change hands on disqualification. So, I think Seth Rollins wins by DQ and they both leave with their own belt.
Or just Seth Rollins re-breaks John Cena's nose.
Could do that.
Just a straight up, just walks out and punches.
You know what? Cena cut a hell of a promo on Raw against Triple H and Rollins.
Yep. And Rollins' promo immediately before that was fantastic as well.
No, the best John Cena promo was the one the week before. Remember where he was just on the Titantron? That was a great promo.
Yes.
I love that promo.
Yeah, it's a weird feud. This, I don't really get what it's achieving apart from just filling a slot.
Basically,
kind of Seth Rollins' title reign is just filling a slot.
I was kind of not really into this until Seth Rollins accidentally broke Cena's nose, and then I was like, "Oh, this is awesome!" Now,
yeah, I couldn't give a crap until then.
Then it became super awesome. You're like, "Oh, this is really cool."
Now I give a little bit of a crap, but not too much.
Yeah.
But it's fantastic what they've done with Seth Rollins since then as well. You can't see knee.
Yeah,
that's great.
Never shuts up. It's just brilliant. Yeah.
But also, I would love it if it was just like a complete shoot. Like Seth Rollins comes out, is booked to lose, and just breaks John Cena's nose. He's like, you're not taking my fucking title.
Just nope.
Nope. Just knees him in the face again, re-breaks his nose and pins him. That would be amazing. But yeah, it can be a weird fish. Also, then obviously the most important match in the card, Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker. If you want to talk about a match that is going to be a war, this is it.
I don't understand this at all.
I understand all of this. It's great.
You don't understand it.
I just don't get it. I don't know what they're doing. I don't, because Brock Lesnar has become a face since Rollins cashed in Money in the Bank.
Yeah.
And he wrecked Raw. Brock Lesnar's a face. The Undertaker's being used as a heel with all the low blows and stuff. Yes. But the crowd's never going to boo The Undertaker.
But they are a little bit.
Well, that was a little bit.
Yeah, the Minnesota crowd booed him.
A little bit.
But
I love this.
I'll watch Lesnar Undertaker matches all day long, but I just don't know. I don't know how they're going to do it. I don't know who can come out on top.
I like that we're
Kane seeing returns.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Chris!
Isn't he still in Hawaii?
No, he got his ankle broken.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And then Brock Lesnar broke his ankle. Which was a much more logical reason for The Undertaker to return and be pissed at Brock Lesnar than you broke my streak 2 years ago, but you won't shut up about how you broke it.
No, I love this.
That was a good reason. It was just like, I wouldn't have minded if he'd done that like near to WrestleMania, but the fact he waited like 18 months made it seem kind of weird.
Oh no, it makes it. I love it.
Yeah, I think that was weird until Paul Heyman sold it.
Yes.
Oh yeah, because Paul Heyman can sell anything.
What I love is you're seeing a new side to The Undertaker at like 50 years old and 25 years in.
Yeah.
You've never seen Undertaker this emotional and this desperate.
Yeah.
I love what I thought it made total kayfabe sense to me was Undertaker appeared at Battleground, went to chokeslam Lesnar. Lesnar countered it immediately and he realised, oh shit, and booted him straight in the balls right after. I think he's realised that he's that desperate and he's put himself in a situation he can't afford to ever to lose.
Was fantastic with that whole thing at Battleground was the whole, because I mean, I watch this stuff now, my wife has got really into the wrestling, it's awesome. So we watch this together and we spend the whole time for the whole like promos and as they're selling that match coming up to Lesnar Rollins for the championship. With saying there's no way, it's just inconceivable. Seth Rollins cannot beat Brock Lesnar. Nobody can beat Brock Lesnar. And they had that whole thing in the ring. And Brock Lesnar's obviously just about to win. And he's just dominant the whole match, basically. And it's like, well, of course Brock Lesnar's about to win because nobody can beat him. And then the gong goes off. And it's The Undertaker in the ring facing Brock Lesnar. And Brock Lesnar's face completely sells it. And my wife turned to me and went, The Undertaker can beat Brock Lesnar. And it was like, yes, absolutely. That's exactly. They've just perfectly, in one move, they've made Brock Lesnar vulnerable. And he hasn't been vulnerable for like 2 years.
Yeah, it's true.
So it's kind of interesting that way. But, you know, if The Undertaker wins, then Brock Lesnar's beatable. So he's not scary anymore. If Brock Lesnar wins, then The Undertaker kind of isn't scary anymore.
I think this is another screwy finish. I'm not sure if I see it this way or not, but the only way out I can see that neither man loses clean as Paul Heyman turns, sides with Undertaker. Undertaker is pure heel and Sting confronts him for WrestleMania.
Oh, wait, this somehow ends with Sting Undertaker.
Oh, yeah. The only way I can see it ending is with Sting Undertaker, and I can see it Sting being like, why did you portray the last 25 years just to get this one win or just to do this?
Yeah.
I think that's awesome, but I don't think that Lesnar works without Heyman.
Yeah, you can't take Lesnar away from Heyman. You can't take Heyman away from Lesnar because Lesnar is then just really boring.
Yeah, I don't think like conceptually. I think like factually, I think Brock Lesnar refuses to work without Paul Heyman.
Yeah, Lesnar cut that one promo that one time that was dreadful. Walked backstage, Vince McMahon went, "Well, that didn't go well," and Lesnar just responded saying, "Get me my due."
Yeah. Get me Paul Heyman.
No,
he's my Jew.
No. Yeah, exactly. It's like, I need my Jew. Like, okay, that's kind of a weird way to phrase that, Brock. But yes, of course, Brock, because you terrify all of us. Whatever you would like.
I can see babyface Lesnar working, because he never needs to speak. He just needs to come out and murder people.
He is kind of babyface now, though.
Yeah, but Paul Heyman is a babyface, is he?
I think Paul Heyman's sort
Paul
of
Heyman's
babyface.
Paul Heyman's promos are pretty much the same as he would be cutting, apart from on Raw. It was playing along to the crowd a bit.
But I think the thing is, right, with Paul Heyman's promos, Paul Heyman's promos work heel or face. It's just, it's contextualizing it. And I think in the context, it's in their face promos, just because that's how the feud is kind of framed. And it's really interesting that WWE are kind of managing to do this a little bit now, where people can turn without really changing anything about them by just slightly recontextualizing stuff. Because it's basically the same thing they do with the New Day, is they were doing pretty much the same stuff and just kind of shifted the framing for a little bit, and then they turned heel. And so I could see Brock Lesnar to me is basically like the top baby, or maybe behind John Cena, but it's like one of the top two baby faces in the company right now.
Neither man in this feud is the heel or face. It's
I don't think in this feud they are, no. But that's only because it's The Undertaker. I think if Brock Lesnar was against literally anyone else, then this would be Brock Lesnar as a face.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think that's why it's not Brock Lesnar against Roman Reigns, isn't it?
Yeah.
In this feud, it's no one's really the face or the heel. But it's a weird one. I think I've still got Undertaker winning it.
Yeah, but I don't see what you do with Brock Lesnar. I don't see what you do with a loser either way. Like, it's just impossible.
I think that's why you need something to happen in this match that leads into another storyline, because there is no other storyline after this. We were talking about this on the last episode, like, where do we go after this? You can't really see anything for either man.
The only way I could see this really working, and this could work, is if Lesnar loses and you portray him as, like, slightly vulnerable, and someone is like, hey, someone kind of goes, oh, Lesnar's vulnerable, I can take him. And then Lesnar just beats the crap out of them. Because that, like, and I mean, like, to the John Cena at SummerSlam last year level kind of beating. Like, if Brock Lesnar does that, I could see that kind of working, because then you make The Undertaker look strong. And you make The Undertaker look ridiculously strong, because you're like, no, Brock Lesnar is still absolutely fucking terrifying. It's just because it was The Undertaker.
Would Taker sell out to the 40? Does that make sense as well?
Maybe Kane comes back and interferes.
Kane! Cool, then. Gonna be Kane.
Kane turns The Undertaker to the Authority.
Yeah.
Gonna be Kane. All about Kane. Kane's awesome.
Because Kane had his ankle broken and then hasn't been back since.
Yep. All about Corporate Kane. There's gonna be Kane versus The Undertaker at WrestleMania.
No. Well, fuck's sake. That hasn't been good since 1998.
Still, Kane versus The Undertaker at WrestleMania.
Oh, God.
And they both retire.
No.
Glenn Jacobs goes off and is like a bank manager, whatever the fuck he does in the rest of his time. It's something like that. He's an investment broker or something fucking weird. It's very confusing.
He's a libertarian, isn't he?
He is.
Political talks and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've watched a couple of his talks. It's strange.
Yeah. The thing is, his talks made sense until he was Corporate Kane. And now they just look like they're part of his Corporate Kane gimmick. It's very weird.
It's just an elaborate gimmick.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of worked before he was Corporate Kane. And I'm like, oh, you're dressed exactly the same in normal life. No, I don't understand. You Kane or Glenn Jacobs?
He was better when he was Fake Diesel, anyway.
Oh.
That's a lie.
Yeah, nothing about Fake Diesel was better in any way. No.
Jerry Lawler's dentist. That was obviously his best role. My God. Right, so who are we picking here? I think Undertaker has to win. I don't think he can lose two. But I don't see it being clean.
The problem is, like,
the problem with a lot of the matches on this card is they don't seem like they'll end clean. Because it doesn't make sense for them to end clean.
My one problem with The Undertaker losing this, if The Undertaker loses this, with The Undertaker winning this, is if The Undertaker wins this, like, Brock Lesnar doesn't get a rubber match. Like, that's the question mark, because there's no way they're going to do, like, this for a third time at WrestleMania, right?
Oh, Survivor Series?
I don't think so. So, maybe, but it doesn't seem very likely.
I can only see an Undertaker heel turn as well out of this.
I think if you do this, you have to give this to us again. Because you have to be like, you have to give Brock, you have to give one of them the overall victory, you know? You have to give it to one of them. And I don't know. Whereas if Brock Lesnar wins, you're like, oh, Brock Lesnar beat The Undertaker twice. Like, cool.
I don't know. I quite like the idea of The Undertaker turning heel and maybe siding with the Authority in some way, and Sting then coming out, and The Undertaker then spins off with a feud with Sting, and people forget about the
No, because I just think
Lesnar versus Authority.
I just think that that is the thing that then just hangs over Lesnar for the rest of his career.
No, I don't see that.
Because they're just because they're so... It wouldn't if it was any other opponent than The Undertaker, but because of the 21-1 thing, because of that, and because of how they have built 21-1, like how they built Brock as the Conqueror, if he loses The Undertaker, that's going to be the thing. That's going to be the thing for the rest of his career. It's like, yeah, you beat Undertaker at WrestleMania, you went 21-1, but then he beat you at SummerSlam.
Yeah, but if he only beats him because of the Authority, it'll be like the Punk Lesnar match a few years ago.
Mm.
Like the focus will just be turned to Heyman again. So the focus for Lesnar will be turned to the Authority.
And the Undertaker doesn't necessarily have to win. The Undertaker can lose by disqualification because somebody's interfered.
Oh, I don't know.
So then he loses by DQ but doesn't look weak.
DQ is probably just be like I really want a clean finish to this match though.
It's so, not going to be
because I think if you don't go clean finish to this match, again it's just a question mark.
I think like, question marks are fine though. I think that you need a question mark coming out of this. If you get a like solid conclusion, no guy or neither guy has anywhere to go.
Yeah, I guess.
I think you need that question mark to give us something. Until WrestleMania.
The problem I have with this, is in the WWE, 99% of the time, wins and losses don't matter. But, like, this actually really matters because of how they built Brock Lesnar breaking the streak. How they built that makes this matter. And that's why I think it, like, the result of this match is actually important for once. Like the only other thing at time I can think of that was comparable was like the whole you remember when John Cena wrestled Punk on Raw to get into the to get the Rock or something at WrestleMania?
Yeah.
And like it was the whole thing of like John Cena can't beat Punk. He's never managed to do it. And then he finally beats Punk. Like that's the only other time I can remember it, like an individual win or loss being a big deal. But like generally they don't matter, but because it actually matters, because it actually feels like it's got consequence. I don't know how you book it. It just makes it actually. It's so rare that we have a match that actually matters. It makes the booking difficult.
It does, and that's another point you've brought up. Undertaker's never beaten Lesnar ever, well.
No, exactly.
I just can't see Undertaker losing. I've just had to check the betting odds. Undertaker's 1-2 favourite as well.
Oh, I don't know.
So, bookies are never wrong about wrestling.
I don't know. I'd like to see whatever way this ends up. I'd like to see, as they head into the Survivor Series, I'd like to see a traditional Survivor Series match with just Brock Lesnar against a team.
Brock Lesnar versus the Authority's minions.
Yeah, Brock Lesnar against the Authority, or Brock Lesnar against, like...
Brock Lesnar basically did that.
Yeah.
He broke Kane's ankle and took out J&J Security.
Ooh.
That was pretty much the whole of the Authority, and then he had a match against Seth Rollins, and then that was the whole Undertaker thing.
I think you go back to the Lesnar Authority thing. But on the betting odds, if you want to make some easy money, Randy Orton 3-1 underdog to beat Sheamus.
Oh, yeah. Take that.
It's like a tenner on there. There you go. WrestleMania paid for.
In what way is WrestleMania then paid for?
Because that's like 25 quid on Sky Box Office now.
But I have WWE Network.
Yeah, but that always breaks for me.
Oh, no, because I won't watch it until like the next day. Because I'm not staying up to watch a 4-hour show that starts at 1 a.m. because I have to go to work.
I would, but I have work now.
Yeah. The guys at work were amazed this year that I didn't take the day off after WrestleMania. I was like, I love wrestling, but not that much.
I'm doing that next year.
I did. I took the day off after the Super Bowl because the Super Bowl is actually inconvenient to watch not live, whereas WrestleMania is very easy to watch not live. So, So anyway, the important thing is we don't really know how this match finishes.
No.
I can't pick a winner.
I can't call it. Time limit draw. Actually, that's one suggestion I have seen. I don't think it will be, but the reason that this show has been up to 4 hours is John Cena versus Seth Rollins is going to be a 1-hour time limit draw.
But WWE doesn't have time limits.
I think they the things I think they do, I just think they never reach them. I reckon there's like there is a 1 hour time limit in WWE, but that never comes up.
Oh, there is.
Yeah.
But WWE hasn't done a time limit draw since 1972.
I know, but I think this, it would just be an interesting finish that match.
I don't know. I don't want that to happen because Daniel Bryan has been quite public about wanting to do like an Iron Man match or
no, but an Iron Man match is different to a time limit draw.
The WWE can't just start pulling out rules they've ignored for 20 odd years.
Of course they can.
No, but
that's all they do.
It makes me fucking angry, Chris.
that's literally all they do.
Remember that one time they had the instant replay?
Yeah, that was weird.
Fuck that shit.
Remember the 30-day rule?
Yes.
That doesn't exist anymore.
It should. Ryback shouldn't have the title.
It probably should exist, but even so. Ryback has been defending the title while in hospital.
And I see, well, all matches used to be a 20-minute time limit, like normal matches on Raw and stuff.
Yeah. But, yeah.
You can't... Oh, I'm standing like GR, aren't I?
Of course you can.
It's no psychology.
It's not good. But I can definitely. Do you know why I think WWE will do it?
What?
Because Ring of Honor did it.
So?
That's why. And Ring of Honor did it in exactly the same situation. And that's why. Because WWE do not have original ideas.
They'll do the duct tape, the feet to the corner post spot again.
God.
Just because they've not done that in a few months.
The only time that was even vaguely interesting was when Dean Ambrose like handcuffed Wade Barrett and made him sign the contract. That was actually quite an interesting idea. All the other times, anything like that is boring and terrible.
Yeah. It's going to be a really screwy pay-per-view, isn't it?
Time limit draw.
It's not going to be a time limit draw.
All matches will end in the time limit draw.
My God, man.
I've been quite looking forward to it, but looking at the card and talking over the matches tonight has kind of made me think that it's going to be an absolute mess.
Yep, I think it probably will be.
It's like they've put themselves in a corner with the two big matches.
Apart from Stephen Amell versus, the Stephen Amell match is going to be awesome.
I know, I don't think it's going to be bad. I just don't, like, the two main event matches, I don't understand how they're going to get out of them without doing something screwy.
Although, to be fair, if they do, we're going to be really impressed.
Because Rollins can beat John Cena for both titles. That's fine. Like, but they won't do that. But like the actual main event is they're in a position where I just can't possibly see it being clean. Mm. The only clean finish it could really be is Undertaker winning, I think. Because I don't think you can have him lose two in a row and then still be somewhat credible. Going forward,
I honestly don't know.
This is the first time we've been guessing a while, and it's good.
Yeah, that is true.
It's a bit exciting.
I mean that's very true. That it is actually nice that we're like actually uncertain for once. But on the other hand, I don't think I'm uncertain in a good way. I think I'm uncertain in I'm concerned that this is going to be a terrible way.
Well, any sort of uncertainty is good because I had a bet on it on the take a return to Battleground, so even that wasn't a surprise.
Yeah.
So it would be good for this to be a bit of a surprise.
All right. Anyway, let's wrap this up because we honestly don't know. We can't just keep saying we don't know. This has been episode 20. If you want to get the podcast, go to bygod.tumblr.com. You can get some Twitter at bygodblog. You can get me on Twitter as HalPress, HALBPro. You can get Colin as bar66, that's bar with two R's, and you can get Peter as Colossal Blue. SummerSlam is Sunday, tomorrow, whatever. And we will watch it and we will get back to you with the results and the analysis and stuff. But for
analysis?
Now, not analysis, just
are we
stuff.
Doing that now?
Yeah, sort of. For now, say goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye. Sunday, SummerSlam.